Drive a Chevy 'cause he drove Chevys. Like him, I'm a baseball fan. I'm going back to see him while he still knows who I am.
Welcome.
Mama says
this is Dr. Steve Nurse. And this is our next series of Is Abled. And it's a series on dementia and Alzheimer's. And what we would like to do here is let you know what you need to know about dementia and Alzheimer's disease. The series is 6 episodes, and we will discuss both dementia and Alzheimer's disease. The main person interviewed is Brad Tyson. Dr. Brad Tyson has been a clinical neuropsychologist since 2014 and specializes in cognitive assessment. He has clinical and research interests in dementia, traumatic brain injury, Parkinson's disease, multiple sclerosis, epilepsy, substance abuse, chronic pain, and general medical disorders associated with cognitive impairment. He was trained in neuropsychology and neuroimaging research at Dartmouth Medical Center in New Hampshire. He currently works for the Eastside Neuroscience Institute at Evergreen and Overlake Medical Centers. Hello. This is Dr. Steve Nurse, and this is our episode 3 of our series on dementia. And one of the things I think that, at least in our first couple, we debunked the theory that if you took Prevagen, and which comes from jellyfish, apparently, that you know, it would solve all your problems, and it doesn't. And so I've stopped looking for ways to cook jellyfish and New York Times. And so what we're going to talk about today is how is dementia diagnosed? And Brad, why don't you get started with that? And
sure, yeah. So, you know, dementia is a very complex, multifaceted disease entity, and sometimes the journey to the correct dementia diagnosis requires multiple diagnostic tests and techniques. If you or your loved ones are concerned about cognitive changes of any kind, like reduced attention span, trouble solving problems, short-term memory loss, difficulty speaking or understanding people, changes in perception, or if you have a family history of dementia and you have concerns, tell your primary care doc, okay, or your main healthcare provider, and be proactive about this. So your primary care doc will consider your symptoms and may run you through some preliminary tests. So an accurate diagnosis of dementia requires that all reversible causes of cognitive difficulties be identified and addressed.
So one of the things I'm hearing from you is that it's, well, I think you said it right off the bat, multifaceted.
Sure.
And I think so many times, you know, when I was looking and doing research on this, you know, in well, through the Google and all the, you know, everybody wants to have a test that's, you know, these are the 10 questions that will determine if you're going to die of dementia. And it's not that kind of a, you can't do that, you know.
Yeah, I wish it was that simple.
Yeah,
and maybe someday it will be.
Yeah.
Well, so there's a number of common, you know, treatable causes of cognitive decline in older adults, like depression, stress, abnormal thyroid function, hearing or vision decline, nutritional deficiencies, sleep apnea, or other, you know, unidentified or untreated medical disorders, medications with cognitive side effects. So there are a number of these, you know, potential treatable conditions that can be associated with cognitive problems. And depending on a variety of factors, the symptoms, the results of preliminary tests, the level of concern, your PCP may consult with a neurologist or another specialist, like a psychiatrist or a neuropsychologist.
Yeah. And medications, that's one that I think I bet really affects a lot of people, because as people get older, they're taking more medications.
Sure.
And my sister-in-law, for instance, doctor gave her a new medication. Well, it was the same medication that she had before, but it was a generic. So she winds up taking twice.
Double dose. Yeah.
And it started to affect her memory.
Yeah. Yeah, and so certainly that's something you want to do with your PCP, is evaluate your medications and see if there's any ones that are associated with cognitive side effects, any ones that could be replaced or removed if they do have cognitive side effects. So that's one of the, you know, one of the first things that you do.
And that's a pretty easy thing to solve.
Yeah, I mean, but there are medications that are associated with cognitive difficulties that you wouldn't expect to be. So, you know, drugs for acid reflux have been implicated in an increased dementia risk. You know, drugs that help with urinary incontinence, right? So drugs that you wouldn't think had any effect on the brain can have an effect on the brain.
Yeah, I think Prilosec or...
Yeah, proton pump inhibitors.
Yeah, so, yeah. Well, that was one that they were saying that possibly was a cause.
Yeah, and there's a couple potential reasons for that. So with the proton pump inhibitors, which are prescribed to treat, you know, acid reflux, they may be associated with reduced absorption of certain vitamins that are important for the brain, and they may be implicated in amyloid buildup in the brain, which is, we'll talk about that when we talk about Alzheimer's disease more, but it's one of the components of Alzheimer's disease. And so, you know, the workup for dementia typically includes a detailed history obtained from the patient and a knowledgeable informant, so like a spouse or other family member or friend, a neurological examination, you know, certain laboratory studies, brain imaging, and neuropsychological assessment. But increasingly sophisticated biomarkers are emerging, such as specialized brain imaging techniques, fluid-based biomarkers, skin biopsies. And, you know, a neurologist will typically order a brain MRI, but in the early stages of most dementias, a brain MRI is typically normal. You know, but there's more advanced brain imaging scans that can be done, like PET scans, which can actually give you a functional image of the activity or inactivity of different brain regions, and even specialized...
And a PET scan is what? What does that stand for?
Positron emission tomography.
Oh, yeah. I'm glad I asked. Now that's burned in
my brain. All you need to know is that they can inject you with something that can visualize certain things that we may want to visualize in the brain.
Okay.
So things like amyloid, one of the components of Alzheimer's disease. Or we can even look at, you know, how dopamine is transported throughout the brain, which can help differentiate certain types of tremors, like the tremors you might see in Parkinson's and the Parkinson's spectrum of disorders. You can, you know, also identify markers of different dementias like Alzheimer's and Parkinson's by doing a lumbar puncture and looking through the cerebral spinal fluid. Blood-based biomarkers are coming out and showing promise.
Are we getting more of these all the time? I mean, in the diagnosis, are we finding more of these things that...
They are emerging increasingly.
Yeah.
And this will be the future of the dementia diagnosis. So we have a Parkinson's disease care center at Evergreen Hospital where I work, and we use a skin biopsy that can help identify a protein called alpha-synuclein that builds up and is associated with Parkinson's disease and dementia with Lewy bodies and something else called multiple systems atrophy. So, you know, we're getting these biomarkers that are you know, improving our diagnostic accuracy in living people. And you know, a neuropsychological evaluation can also help with the diagnosis. You know, different dementias can be associated with relatively distinctive clinical presentations, including differential patterns of cognitive decline, particularly early in the course. The specific dementia diagnosis often relies, in fact, on the cognitive patterns and behavioral observations that you can get with a neuropsychological assessment. And then, you know, the neurologist or the head of the multidisciplinary, you know, diagnostic team considers all of the results, all of the evidence, and then makes the final diagnosis. And it used to be that an autopsy was required to confirm the diagnosis of dementia, and that's no longer the case. I mean, these newer biomarkers are increasingly being developed with improving accuracy. So I think soon we should have, you know, or be able to identify the presence of these different dementias in less invasive ways, like a single brain imaging scan, or fluid-based biomarkers like blood or spit. And I think that's where we're headed, given the rapid pace of the research right now and the increasingly sophisticated understanding of these diseases.
Yeah, autopsy is pretty invasive.
I would say so. Yeah. You know, sometimes you can do a brain biopsy, but nobody does that, right? I mean, that would be one way to get at the pathology.
Yeah, and it, probably because it's just so risky to do it. I mean, you know, what's the value?
You know. Yeah. And then some, you know, this might be done like a brain biopsy in some, you know, rapidly progressing dementia where, you know, we don't know what's going on and we really need the diagnosis because the person is deteriorating rapidly.
It isn't Lewy bodies. That didn't you say that was a much more pretty aggressive?
Well, Lewy bodies is something that occurs in Parkinson's disease.
Oh, okay.
So it can be, I mean, it's progressive, but it can progress quickly or slowly depending on what disease entity it is and you know, where you're at in the disease.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, you know, more accurate diagnosis will improve the treatments, and we're now on the brink of these, you know, breakthrough therapeutics for some of the most common forms of dementia. So, you know, more accurate diagnosis, better treatments. Mm-hmm. And so that's where we're at.
And so it really is just kind of adding up all these things, and the more things that you can put into your diagnosis, the closer you're going to come. But
that's the fun part of this, at least from the clinical, you know, point of view, is that it's you know, there's a lot of investigative work that goes into this, and you need to put together all the pieces of the puzzle. But the pieces are you know, getting bigger and easier to put together, and we know more and more about these dementias and how to diagnose and treat them.
And also, I think, you know, one of the things that I see a lot in diagnosis is of many types of diseases that it's really difficult to find a direct nexus. You know, how long did we throw up the Marlboro man who smoked 3 packs of cigarettes a day and was 90 years old? And so we said there is no direct nexus with tobacco and cancer.
Yeah.
And, you know, and so that. So what are some of the things when we talk about diagnosing dementia? If you have a loved one that you think is, you know, experiencing memory loss, or mm-hmm. are there things that you should look for? Are there, I would imagine it's also really difficult with a loved one to say, well, I think you should have further diagnosis on this.
But bring them to your primary care doc, and you know, go with them, you know, share these particular symptoms that you're seeing. You know, people always come in and say they have memory problems, but, you know, it's important to underline the fact that your memory sort of declines when you get older. After the age of 40 or 50, our memory starts slowly declining, sadly.
Yeah.
So, but you need to be proactive about this. Like I said before, these pathologies start building up in the brain many years, decades maybe, before we start to see symptoms. So the more you're sort of focused on prevention and you're proactive about that, mm-hmm. that's really the best way to sort of limit this occurring.
I sometimes, I can't remember all the names of all the girlfriends I used to, that I dated, you know. Of course, some were more memorable than others, but, you know, it's the same, or it's interesting how sometimes things will just pop into your mind. You know, you'll try and think of a name for mm-hmm. you know, a long time, and then bam, it's there.
Yeah. You know, things that you might notice are misplacing items around the house, particularly if those items are misplaced in very odd, you know, locations. Repetitiousness. So if somebody tells you something and then, you know, 20 minutes later they tell you the same thing or ask you the same question over and over. You know, but it's really early on, it's hard to distinguish these things from normal age-related, you know, decline to something more serious. And that's why it's important to involve a doctor early, because the doctor's going to put you on the right track to see the right person to identify this.
And so the doctor is going to then probably give you some things that would be preventative or...
Sure.
And what would some of those things...
Well, we can talk about that in the next episode.
Okay.
I think that's, you know, but I can, you know, I can cover them really quickly. So, you know, cognitive and mental exercise are the two most important things that you can do. You know, stay aerobically active and mentally active. So learn as much as you can and exercise as much as you can. Those are the two best ways that you can limit the possibility of this happening.
So, for instance, my wife likes to play a lot of the word games, you know, words with friends or, yeah. you know, some of those kinds of things. So that's actually, as much as it's annoying to me at times, that's really probably a pretty good thing to stretch the brain and to do those kinds of things.
Yeah, you know, those things are okay. You know, I wouldn't rely on that, particularly in isolation. So, you know, you want to do a diversity of different things.
Reading,
writing, learning a language, learning an instrument. Even if you don't get good at those things, really it's about the process of learning. And when you have something, let's say, like solitaire or some brain game that you play repeatedly or words with friends even, although that's a little bit novel, the more that something is automatic, the less benefits you get from it. So it's got to be something that is somewhat challenging, preferably pleasurable, right, and interesting and that you enjoy doing. And once you get good at it, learn something else new. Right. Always be pushing yourself. Always be sort of on your leading edge there.
That's interesting because one of the things this high-paying job here at Voice of Vashon has done for me is, and one of the things I've always really enjoyed is learning new things, mm-hmm. and just like this series or. All the stuff that was different Vietnam series that
right,
we did.
Right.
And I used to, every year, at the beginning of the year, my New Year's resolution, I would try and learn something new.
Yeah, that's good.
One time I tried to learn how to speak Spanish, and I learned it pretty well. And now I can count to 10 pretty effectively. and one year I decided to... to bake bread. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, just different things. But that makes sense.
Yeah. Well, I can tell a story about my dad who had a stroke when he was about 60, 61 years old. And he, you know, when he got home from the hospital, he decided this was his time to relearn the piano. He had played the piano when he was a kid, and then learned Spanish. And so he spent a lot of time in his recovery. He was out of work, and, you know, he was wanting to return to work, and he just had this stroke. And, you know, it wasn't a very pleasant time, you know, at the household, not just because he had a stroke, but because we had to listen to the piano playing. We had to listen to the Spanish, which was pretty awful. But he made a pretty full recovery, and I think that had a lot to do with it, because really he was challenging his brain with things that he had learned previously that he wanted to really sort of, you know, improve upon and relearn. And then, you know, learning Spanish was something he always kind of wanted to do. And so we spent a lot of time, you know, practicing new words and go out to restaurants. He would try to order in Spanish and, it was a little embarrassing, but we're all glad he did it.
You know, and it's interesting. What I kind of hear you saying is, if we go to, a fitness club, we exercise our muscles and we strengthen our muscles and, make positive changes to our joints. So like when I get up in the morning, I, try and do a lot of, motion to, so that I don't sound like a box of Rice Krispies getting up, in the morning. But, I think what you're saying is you're kind of, really exercising your brain.
Yeah. Well, it goes beyond that. I mean, so we know that aerobic exercise can release different sort of factors and chemicals in the brain, one of them being brain-derived neurotrophic factor, which can actually help, neurons grow and make new connections. And when you mix that with learning, right? So when you, the exercise provides the fuel for the brain growth, but the learning provides, the impetus for it, right? Where the connections are being made is what you're learning during the time that you're exercising so much.
And for our audience, give me some examples of aerobic exercise, some things that...
Well, brisk walk.
Swimming, moving, a lot of consistent
movements.
Older persons or even friends of mine, do water aerobics.
Yeah, perfect. If you got joint pain, that's the thing to do.
Yeah, because
it's not impact on the joints.
And what they've told me is it's not true, no pain, no gain.
Right.
You shouldn't go so hard that you hurt yourself.
Mm-hmm.
So I appreciate that, the aerobics part of that. Any other ways that might be indicators that we should look at for before we would... how do you bring this up to somebody if you think somebody has an issue?
Yeah. You just bring it up, and say, we need to go to the doctor and bring this up as part of what we, talk to our doctor during our regular medical checkups.
Right.
And increasingly, in older adults, mental status exams are being incorporated into the standard, medical evaluation of an individual. And that's because of the awareness we have of dementia and the importance of prevention.
Interesting. You'll do this in another 40 years, but at 65, mm-hmm. when you're on Medicare, every year you have to take it's a Medicare wellness. What is it, Rick? He can't remember, so that's a problem. No,
they check for depression. That's one thing.
Yeah, they check for depression.
Yeah.
And another thing that they do is they have you. I thought this was really interesting. They have you draw a clock.
Mm-hmm.
But now they want you to draw an analog clock.
Mm-hmm.
So it's 10 after 2.
Yeah.
And they were saying that people that are just hitting 65 now, draw a digital clock.
The clock drawing test is one of these classic tests. It's incorporated into one of the mental status exam called the Montreal Cognitive Assessment. And you draw a clock, put all the numbers on it, and set a specific time. And surprisingly, that is something that, if someone has a lot of difficulty with that, can, certainly be indicative of needing, further assessment.
Another thing that they do is they'll say, give you three words that are not necessarily mm-hmm. associated.
Mm-hmm.
And then they'll have you come back and...
A couple minutes later, ask you for the words.
Yeah.
For the MoCA, for the Montreal Cognitive Assessment, it's five words. And, they do some intervening tasks and then they ask you for the words again. And what's interesting about this is that... if you can't remember any of the words, well, you know, people have trouble remembering, you know, the words sometimes. The real kicker is whether you improve with cueing. So if they give you a hint, say, okay, this was a type of building, or this is a type of flower. Does that really help? And in Alzheimer's disease, it doesn't help. So those hints and those cues don't really help your memory. In, you know, regular forgetting, or forgetting because of depression or because of something else, the cues typically help.
And memory is so, you know, I know going into Chicago, into the airport,
mm-hmm.
They've tried to do something to help memory. And what they've done is on each floor of the parking, they have attached, like on floor one, it's the Chicago Bulls.
Mm-hmm.
Floor two in parking, it's the Chicago Cubs.
Mm-hmm.
And Barbara and I park there, and then you come back to your car and you remember all those teams, yeah. You know? Was I the Cubs? Was I the Bulls? Was I right. the, you know, and so yeah. It's interesting
it's
how
the
we
same, It's the same sort of idea, right? If, you know, memory is very associative in that way. So, you know, to remember something better, if you can associate it to something that's relevant to you, your recall of that is going to be better.
I'll use sometimes to, like, take a word, or if I've got to remember four or five things, I'll try to make a word that has, you know, those mm-hmm. four or five things in it.
Yeah.
So,
One of the best techniques, although people don't really use this, is called the method of loci, or the memory palace. And this is really good if you want to remember a lot of information. But what you do is you visualize a place that you know very well, preferably a large house or something that has a lot of rooms in it. And then you populate in your mind these rooms with categories of information. So for example, I did this with the DSM-5 when I was trying to, you know, get my psychology license and remember all the psychiatric diagnoses. So I would walk through, you know, the house where I grew up, and I would populate all the rooms. So these are all the, you know, depressive disorders. These are all the, you know, schizophrenia-like disorders. These are all the, you know, bipolar disorders. These are all the anxiety disorders.
So you put all the schizophrenic disorders in your brother's room, probably, right?
I think that was in the basement, actually.
Yeah, that's right.
But, I mean, it really does work if you have the time to do something like that.
Well, that's a good place to stop for this episode. And thank you, Brad, for offering your expertise. And we are out.
Wow. I can't believe it.
Drive a Chevy 'cause he drove Chevys. Like him, I'm a baseball fan. I'm going back to see him while he still knows who I am.
This is Dr. Steve Nurse, and I want to thank everybody for listening to our series on dementia and Alzheimer's disease on Voice of Vashon, the Dynamo of Washington. Thank you, everyone. Have a great day.
While he still knows who I am. This time I'm gonna hug him instead of just shaking hands. Gonna tell him that I love him while he still knows.